I spent the last 3 years learning from some of the best business minds inside the game of basketball. And now I've left my 9-to-5 to create freedom and have fun while doing it. So the question is, how are hoopers and basketball fanatics like us using those same skills that gave us success on the court to give us success in our new sport of business? This podcast will give you the answer. Join me as I learn, apply, share knowledge, and change lives through the game that changed mine. My name is Myson Jones, and welcome to the Basketball to Business Podcast. If you're listening to this right now, I really appreciate you for tuning in. I have a highly esteemed guest, Dr. James Barnes. He's a professor. He's a mentor of marketing, an author. He's a professor, associate extension professor, and economist at Mississippi State University. And he has a book. He has a marketing program that I'm excited to talk about. And you might be thinking, okay, why do we have a marketing professor and economist on the podcast? Well, he's also a youth basketball coach too. And he's been coaching for 20 plus years. Is that right, Dr. Barnes?
That's right. Loving every minute of it.
And seven kids. Did I read that correctly?
Seven. Hope everybody's sitting down to hear that number. But yeah, seven. Six boys, one girl.
Wow. She is tough.
Indeed, she is.
So, Dr. Barnes, I'll be honest, I am going to struggle in this conversation because there are nuances that I want to talk about selfishly, especially with the nexus where economy and your studies as an economist meet with marketing and how you blend those two worlds. But, you know, looking at your course, the free course that you are offering, I should say the sum, I believe you started talking about websites, and I do want to start the conversation there and jump right in if we can towards what are those three questions that you want small business owners, whether it's basketball training or other businesses, to answer once somebody hits onto their webpage?
Yeah. So we'll give it a basketball context, Myson. The shot clock is set at 7 to 10 seconds. When someone gets onto your website, you got to answer three questions in that time frame or you lose possession, right? It's a turnover. You lose that. Mm-hmm. So the first question is, what do you sell? I was at a place yesterday doing a speaking engagement, and I was doing website reviews at the end of the speaking engagement. We were just doing them random, just throw one up on the screen, let's look at it. And a lot of times it just wasn't clear, you know, exactly what are you asking me to buy? And so that's got to be clear. Number two is, what's the benefit? That's where the marketing and sort of economics for me comes in, is like, are we putting the language out there to tell the website visitor, here's how your life's going to get better if you do business with us. Here's the benefit or benefits you're going to experience. And number three, how do I get started to actually buy from you or engage with you? What is the step you want me to take to do business with you? And a lot of times that one button on the website is not there. You know, yesterday I was doing several, I think we did 10 or 15 website reviews. And look, about 8 to 9 of them just didn't have a clear call to action. And so our customers, when they come to our website, we have to direct them. It's like a coach, right? You draw up the play. In this case, the play has, you know, tell me the first step. What do we do? And it's got to be a simple three-step plan after that. But we've got to cover those three questions or the shot clock goes off, you know, and we lose possession. We don't get to have an opportunity to build a relationship with that person who has taken their time to maybe leave your social media and go to your website, or they found you on search or however they got there. But they put their time in to come and see you as a business owner. And it's up to us as business owners to get those answers out in 7 to 10 seconds.
You know, it's so neglected when you frame it that way with the shot clock. The unique visitors that we have that visit our pages, we look at it, at least I do, as just a number when it actually is a person. And I take it for granted because the bounce rate, could you explain bounce rate? Because when you said 7 to 10 seconds, I thought about the average bounce rate, but that's what it is, it's an average, right? It doesn't really reflect those people who stay on your page and who scroll for a certain duration. What is the bounce rate and why is that important?
Well, I mean, it basically indicates how quickly a person leaves the page or not, you know, just in layman's terms. And when they get there, if there's content, especially video content, that keeps them engaged on the page, you know, your bounce rate's going to go down. And we want people to stay on our websites, but we need to answer those three questions very quickly. Now, sometimes, and this is the hard part with bounce rate, right? Someone may get to your website, Meissen, but they're not your ideal customer. So what you're telling them, if you get it right, is, hey, this is what I sell. This is how it makes your life better. Here's how you get it. And they may not be a customer of yours. And that's okay if they leave, because guess what? They're not going to buy from you. They're not going to do business with you. So I wouldn't bet everything on just looking at, you know, that one metric. I think you also have to consider, what do you have on your website that people could download as a free PDF, something, a free course, whatever it is, to get to know you, the brand, the business, you know, the personal brand, if it is, you know, let me get to know you a little bit. I may not be ready to buy. In fact, a lot of people are not ready to buy when they get to your website, no matter what. So that's why we need to have something on the site that gives me a little bit of an experience with the person or the business, so I can see their expertise. I can get an idea of what they're going to do to help me have that better life, right? I'm going to give you an experience with that by downloading something free. And if it's a good value download, I'm more than willing to trade my email address for it. So, you know, you don't want to just look at one metric only when you consider these things, because you may be qualifying your leads by just saying, hey, here's what I sell. Here's how I can help you have a better life. Here's how you get it. And it may not be for you. You may not be my ideal client, and it's okay if you don't stick around.
I like how, and I know you are Story Brand certified, and I really, it's been a while since I read that, but I really like how you've condensed this into, hey, it's this. It's even more condensed than the book itself. And it really puts it in layman's terms for me. To be honest with you, I literally watched your first video and I went to my website and I changed my header from listening to your course. And I answered those three questions, and my headline looks so much better, because there are people who I know come to our site, like you said, that may not be our ideal customer, but you answer so many questions based on what awareness they do or don't have. Some may be aware of the problem they have. Some may not be aware that there's a solution, but it seems like those three questions really answers all of it, no matter where they're coming from.
Yeah. And you have to sort of know if you have a full sales funnel built, and we'll talk about where all those pieces are in it. But when people get to your website, you're making some assumption about how they got there, what they're going to experience and feel when they get there. And so you want to have a broad catch, right? A wide net, but you also, when they get there, you want to be clear about those three things. That tells me everything I need to know very quickly. And, you know, even for people that don't stick around, they can respect that. Oh, that's what they do. Okay, I'm not looking for that. And they move on to something else. So it's actually I think it's a great courtesy or kind thing to explain that very quickly to people, even if they don't want to do business with you. But for the people who do want to take that next step and do business with you, it's a kind thing as well, because here you are saying, look, I know the problem that you have. I get it. So you're sort of empathizing with them very quickly. If this is you, I can help you solve that problem. Here's how your life's going to get better, because they're buying a transformation, right? They're not just buying the service from you or the product, whatever it may be. You do all kinds of great training, right? So when you work with players or coaches or anybody, they're looking for that experience to take them from today, what they don't have, to a point where they do have something. And that's transformation. They're buying that transformation. So we just want to be clear about what that is, so that people can really get engaged with it, no matter how they get to our site.
I don't know if you call it a strategy or a tactic, but it's very important to optimize our homepage whenever visitors land on that page. What other strategies or tools would you suggest to help businesses survive or thrive during times like we have right now in this economy?
Well, I think always the foundation of it is the messaging. You know, what you're communicating to your customer, sort of your value proposition, right? You're promising a transformation to your customer, being clear about that throughout your website, being clear about the the solutions you offer, you know, being clear about the problem you solve. You're not going to solve all the problems for your ideal customer, right? You're going to solve a big one for them, and then you're going to have some other maybe smaller problems that you can solve as well. Those may be some other services you offer. But being clear about what the problem is after you get past the header part of the website, you know, we're talking about the problem, the main problem, and then we're getting into what the solutions are, making it really simple and easy for people to see bite-sized programs or offerings of whatever it is. If it's a training program, hey, here's a 6-week program. Hey, here's a 12-week program. Here's a whatever it may be. Here's a monthly subscription for training each month. You know, here's what we're going to do in that program. And it could be different things, but you just want to be clear about what those offers are. And then giving people that simple 3-step plan. As you know, people don't want uncertainty. I when I buy something, I need to know how to use it. What am I going to get the benefit from in using that product or service? And how's it going to make my life better? How do I do this in 3 simple steps? You know, one of the teaching methods, you know, you use in any kind of training is you break it all down into 3 steps, right? So if you're teaching someone basketball or anything like that as a sport, you're breaking the pieces down into 1, 2, 3, and then letting people do it faster to develop the skill. It's really no different in directing our customers on a website. Step 1, step 2, step 3, here's where we go from there. This is how you're going to get better in your life because you're going to use my product, my service, my program, whatever it may be.
I like that. Training a trainee is similar to training your potential prospect or customer. I like that. And you talked about problems, and you made me think about this in the course. It talks about leading with the problem and being polar. And I don't watch much TV, but one thing I have watched recently is Bel Air. It's a remake of the Fresh Prince of Bel Air. And every episode, it's almost like a mini episode where they start with, hey, here's what the problem is going to be in this episode. And it starts with a high point of drama, gets you like really engaged, and then it goes into the episode itself. I'm already hooked. So you made me think about that when you mentioned that. And it's like, oh, that's what they're doing. How do I do that? How do we do that in our marketing and our messaging on different channels?
Well, I mean, one of the ways you can do it is you can just simply ask a question. Do you struggle with this problem? I tell this story a lot. You know, I was driving on the interstate years ago through, I can't remember where I was at exactly, but the billboard caught my attention because it was so clear about problem. As I was driving down, I looked up and the billboard says, gambling problem ? In just really large print. Now I don't have that problem, but it was just so, I always look at advertisements everywhere I go because I kind of nerd out with that stuff. And so I just saw that and I go, oh wow, that's a really clear way to say, hey, is this where you are? And then underneath it, what I loved the most about it was in really bold letters, it said, we can help. So there was a big dose of empathy, you know, on that billboard. And then it had a little silhouette and it said, if you don't get help, this is what you could lose. And it had a silhouette of a family. And then down below it said, call us today. And it had a number and that was it, you know, but it was just super quick. But as you said about the what you were watching, the Bel Air, it's that problem that hooks us and gets us to pay attention to it. It builds drama. It builds curiosity. You know, if you look at a lot of Netflix series or anything on Amazon or anything, they mostly start with a problem. A plane disappears, lands 5 years later, and now we got to figure out what in the world happened to that, right? There's all kinds of stuff, you know, in that same box. Supervillains, right? Any movies we have that we watch like that. Avengers, you just name one. They start off with some problem, or they start off with the character and life is great, right? It's all smooth. And then boom, there's this sort of inciting incident and that creates the problem and the drama. And we stay tuned for that. We want to see, we're trying to answer one question. How does that work out? What happens at the end? And so the more we can communicate, here's the problem that that we solve for our customers, the more they're going to dial into understanding exactly how we can help them have a better life. It opens that entire dialogue up. So asking questions that people can relate to is a huge first step in doing that in any of your website copy or, you know, anything that you're doing on social as well.
I like that. And I know you talk about, well, that ad in particular, that billboard, it has the pain point and it wants to move you towards or away from that pain and towards the pleasure, but it does both really well in a succinct, concise way, which I really do like. How do you continue to include positive encouragement in your goals as a professor or any businesses that you help out? Why is positive encouragement fundamental to the goals? And how do you include that in messaging if you can or suggest?
Well, it's we often want to paint a picture of success that our customers are going to experience when they do business with us. We like, as just the way our brains work, we want to see somebody that's actually in a better state than when they were having a problem before. And so when we look at marketing copy, it could be website or anything, we're looking to see what does the transformation look like? Because that's where I want to be. And so what we often do is we'll paint that picture of success in words or design or, you know, pictures, all kinds of different ways of putting it together so that people can see what they're aspiring to be. You know, any kind of training that you do, you're trying to show maybe a player, hey, when you get this skill set, you're going to be like this. This, if you're teaching someone offensive skills, right? You know, you're going to be really hard to guard going back left or right, and this is why. And so you break it down. It's the same thing in marketing. You know, we're trying to show what that transformation looks like and invite our customers into wanting to be in that place and experience that transformation. That's really what it's about.
I'll be honest, my fault, my kryptonite is always, I don't want to say being transactional, but the economist portion in me wants to know what's the impact economically, you know, and in this market where there are a lot of coaches who do what they do based on altruism and not economics, it does, as an industry, it makes it hard at times to compete because you're not competing against a market that really does base things off of economic principles. Yeah, I'm sure you can say that for a lot of different industries, but I guess my question for you is, how can we use technology to boost brand awareness is the first question. And how can you quantify that brand awareness to where you know that it has an impact on your day-to-day small business?
So technology is really broad. I mean, any technology you use to get more connected and be able to communicate at a lower cost for you, the business owner, and the person on the other side is a good thing. And social media, whether you go live on Instagram or however you use it, you know, reducing the cost of someone engaging with you is the key, whatever that may be. It could be a different time of day. It could be a different day of the week. It could be the weekend. I don't know. Time has a lot to do with, you know, the using of technology to make it easier for people to connect. So I think that's a big part of it, you know, figuring that out in a small business or any business, trying to figure out how we make it easier for people to get connected with us. You know, maybe they're not ready to buy from us, but maybe we have could be a Facebook group. It could be, you know, any kind of group where they can be involved and see a little bit of it before they actually want to, you know, buy our services. And then remind me of your second question, if you would.
How do you quantify that to where we're talking about brand awareness? Because look, Nike's not cold calling me every single day to try to make me buy their shoes or their shirts. You know, they have a brand that is very recognizable. So how do we, as small business owners, quantify some of those efforts towards brand awareness that will help drive the bottom line, which is what we need to do to stay alive and thrive?
Yeah, so you're trying to connect a lot of things when you raise that question. You're trying to connect content that you produce to the actual engagement pieces that you receive for doing the content and putting it out. That's one level of trying to see, hey, is my content resonating with people? Am I getting something here? Because you may need to make the adjustment there before you really worry about looking at sales You know, but if sales are showing you, you know, look, we're not taking our content and being able to get more sales from it, that conversion, then, you know, that's an even stronger signal, right? If you've got those pieces connected. And let's be honest, it's not going to happen just maybe in one space. You may have to get some kind of a dashboard software to bring these things together. Google Studio, you may have to get something like that to bring these things together so you can easily see them. And we have to remember too, there's always a lag in this stuff. You know, producing content that's, it takes a while to make that brand awareness really beef up, right? It's not instant. Putting out a free course, it's gonna take a little bit. You're gonna have to put the word out. You're gonna have to get the word out about the course or whatever it is, you know, all the content you're doing, it takes time to get it in front of the people that you want to engage with. So also there's a lag when we see sales. You know, if you do 10, 20, 30 posts this month and you see sales go up 500%, man, pay attention to what happened and what you posted, right? Because that's the money. That's where you make that, you figure out the connections. But oftentimes that's not the case, right? It's a long game. You know, we're going to be in it, you know, we don't have this viral video that's going to really change us overnight. So instead, it's about putting the work in to create good content, to help our customer have a better life, help them a little bit, and keep doing that on sort of an 80-20 basis to build that awareness. 80% of the time, you're trying to give them content to help them. And 20% of the time, yeah, ask them to be engaged with you somehow. It may just be the engagement, you know, in social, to join your live thing on Instagram or whatever you're doing, but trying to get them to engage with you so that they could move possibly from just being engaged with you to actually buying your services, and then telling other people about you, you know, beyond just buying it. We're looking for social proof after. So there's this whole spectrum you really have to keep up with. And it's no wonder everybody struggles with it. There's a lot of moving parts. I just creating the content alone, there's a set of things you got to do and, you know, go through and produce to get that 80% of it right. And it takes a lot of work. Let's just be honest. Let's not make it sound super, super easy, simple, quick. It's not. You got to put the work in.
Absolutely. And I think about your process to you know, have your doctorate. Like, you have to go through the bachelor's, you have to go through the master's, you have to decide you want your PhD, you have to actually go through the coursework, you have to actually put in a dissertation, and then have somebody, in my mind, my limited understanding of it, somebody battle you and make you defend why you believe this, and then it's approved and you got it. Like, that sounds like a grind while you've got family life and everything else going on. Yeah. And that process,
it's totally true. It's that process is a grind. It's you know, once you make that commitment to whatever you're doing, right, you want to see it happen. And hey, look, you know, there were a lot of failures that I went through, a lot of failures all throughout the process, but you just keep getting back up, you keep doing it, and you keep fighting, you know. And I think business owners are in that same boat, right? You get up every day, you're going to produce content today. You don't see sales increase today, but that's okay. You're committed to creating the content that's good for your customers if they find it, and you put it in front of them as many as you can, and you keep working at it. And it takes that same kind of grit, same kind of grind, really, I think, to be a successful business owner. I think it takes the same things.
Before we went live or recorded this, you talked about outsourcing and using your team and your community. And we just talked about how challenging it is, especially with many different platforms. So for our basketball training business, I'm noticing, like, I'm nerding out on Google Ads right now and Google Analytics, and maybe too much, right? But we've gotten a lot of customers from Google My Business, Google Ads, from Facebook, and some from, you know, organic content itself. And to your point, after we finish producing this content, it's like, I don't even want to look at the numbers. I'm so tired from producing the content and putting it on that platform itself. I forget to go back in the limited time frame that we have sometimes for maybe some stories or whatever that content is. I forget to look at the data, but you know, when you talk about reducing the cost of somebody engaging with us, it makes so much sense at scale to do that. So not from an advertising perspective or even an organic content perspective, or maybe from those perspectives, what is the importance of the community playing a role in helping a small business do well?
Well, you know, a couple different aspects we can go into on that. You know, we were talking before about just how, you know, marketing your business is really a team sport. You know, I think a lot of business owners go it alone and they get overwhelmed and there's burnout. Maybe they don't have enough time to spend at home with their families too. They're doing a lot of, you know, really great things and chasing it, but it can be overwhelming. And at times there's nothing wrong with having someone step in and you can outsource to help you. And if it's producing content, maybe that's the place where, you know, you're great at producing the content, but maybe you need someone to take it from there and run the next part of the relay race, right? Take the baton here and now cut it up, piece it up, put it together, send it out, you know, do all those types of tasks. So it just kind of really depends, you know, what you're really best at, you know, and you want to divide your labor up to where I'm doing the thing that I'm the best at doing to produce my content and run the business in general. But there are places in my business I don't want to actually do that part of it, or that's just not my gifting. That's not a place that I want to spend my time because I'm not going to be the best at it. So it's really finding those places where you need to outsource. And we all know budgets are limited when you go to outsource too, right? I want to outsource, but I want to minimize my cost as much as possible. Well, you look around, you see what your options are. You know, they're hiring maybe someone that's a virtual assistant, maybe the solution, you know, to help you a little bit with some of the tasks and setting up, you know, schedules and anything you could get rid of like that on your schedule to let you work on the thing that's most important. Those are steps at moving towards scale, being able to scale your business and run it more efficiently and give you some time back to get some rest, maybe at the end of the day, even. Maybe that's possible if we can do it right on the outsourcing. So it's not just about efficiency. It's about actually avoiding burnout too.
And I see you taking advantage of that and actually practicing that. I just had one of my teammates transition into a virtual assistant role. It's been so worth it. It's been worth the extra cost in our labor fees. And she's been awesome. And for your team followed up with me 2-3 times, I believe. And I can't imagine you having the time to actually do that and make sure that we have this conversation. So it really is effective. It really is efficient. And you talk about the scaling and the growth. My question for you is, and we're actually at that point now, which is why I'm diving deeper into the advertising, now the messaging, because I see why the messaging can help us reduce the cost to effectively communicate with the prospects. What would you say a business, if it's not growing, what would you say they need to plan on doing to get unstuck? Maybe they are growing, but their churn is just as high. But how do you suggest a business plan to continue to grow and to continue to scale when they reach the stagnation point?
Well, you know, you have to be, I think, first careful about saying that you've reached a certain point, right? That's the first thing, because there could be a lot of factors going on, right? You may have had a little turnover in the business. We had COVID hit us not too awfully long ago. People are still dealing with some issues related to that. I look carefully at the numbers. You know, are we really in a downturn because it's just a bad economy? Are we in a downturn because we've made changes in what we do in our sales funnel, our content, our, you know, what we offer even as our services or products? You know, you got to look carefully to make sure, you know, okay, I think it's really this is what's going on. And then after that, you start diving into what looks to be where you're stuck. You know, maybe it is that you had to hire somebody and that didn't work out. And so now you're going to internalize and do those activities in-house. Okay. You got to create some more time somewhere. It's not going to happen out of thin air. So you have to start figuring out, how do I juggle this a little bit differently now? So it's all about managing, I think, your time as a business owner, right? What you do best, but making sure that you're looking at your numbers so that it's not, you don't judge it too quickly either, right? You look at this quarter, but don't compare this quarter, to maybe 10 years ago, 8 years ago, right? We look at the last couple, related years, January, February, March from last year, how did we do compared to this year? And, you want to be looking at that kind of information to forecast and think about what your sales are going to look like. But you just want to be careful you don't make some knee-jerk reactions that could actually put you in a tailspin and make it worse. So if you're using ads, you mentioned Google ads. If you're seeing growth from that, there's nothing wrong with continuing to use that strategy to see if it can move up a little bit more. Can you get that cost per lead down? Are there things you could adjust in keyword or whatever you're doing in the ads? Try to make it more efficient as you move forward with it. But I think it's, maintaining something that's really consistent, you can evaluate it very easily. But if we start making drastic changes, it may get difficult to evaluate. So we want to add, and move things around a little bit at the margin. We don't want to make drastic changes. Now, look, if something is absolutely not selling as a product, that's one thing, right? You may not want to offer it anymore. Or if one product is really taking off, you may want to adjust and put more marketing behind that to reach even more people, right? Those adjustments are fine. You're going to make those at the margin every day that you're running the business. But bigger things about, hiring people in your business or, asking them to take on other responsibilities and making changes internally, those things can really make a difference as you scale. And, look, there are 50 reasons, you could use to scale a company, right? But freeing up your time as the entrepreneur, the owner, is, I think, a huge way to scale, create you some space so you can use your time to do some other things in the business that needs to be done. I think it's all about that time management.
And question for you then, what from the economist standpoint, as a small business owner, what would you be focusing on in regards to the microeconomy with the, I'm reading more in the news about the constructions, about the different permits, the zoning permits, and it may not really adhere to our business specifically because we're not into construction, but how would you suggest from the economist perspective, the small business owner look into what's going on around them in their community?
Well, I mean, I think the first thing that you have to look at is your own business. I mean, because as you just said, there may be a little disconnect between looking at some of those metrics at the national level and then looking at what is happening in your business, right? We always start from the ground up. We always start micro and then we go macro. So in this case, you're looking at your business first. Okay, if you see changes in your business, sales are down, leads are down, right? Engagement is down. Okay. That's now on your dashboard more than paying attention to maybe interest rates only, right? So you have to put your time into figuring out your business thing first, but also understanding, is the economy getting tighter? Is it going to be more difficult to have people spend money on certain goods that are not essential, to their day in and day out life? If you're selling a luxury good itself, maybe there's less disposable income. Maybe they're actually going to be okay and still be able to purchase that product. But I would focus more on the micro of what's going on in my business and get a better handle on that before I let some of the big metrics scare me about some other things that are coming up. I think you're always better off to be looking at it and be paying attention to what the economy says, about the different metrics of people being able to spend more money, rising food costs, you can pay attention to that, but you're always every day going to be looking at what's happening in your business, how you're increasing leads, getting more engagement, what do your sales look like, and working with a great accountant to keep track of your P&L statements and really be able to see how you're doing. Those meetings are invaluable, I think, as a business owner, you just keeping track of all that.
That's a good point. We, starting in 2021 of September, we started to track on a weekly basis, what's our churn, what's our increase in customers. And you're right, the macro can say one thing, And but the micro in your business can say a completely different one. And it does help to see what the seasonality is in the business, so you can plan for those decreases, you can plan for those increases. So I like how you mentioned that, start from the ground up, more internal, and then work your way up to what's going on in the economy itself.
Yeah, because either way, I mean, whatever's happening in the macro economy, sure, it can impact you as a business owner. Absolutely. We all know it can. The question is where. If you have a great eye on the ball, so to speak, about your business and its finances and what you offer and your leads, all these things, then you may be able to pick up much faster as to what the impact's going to be on your business than perhaps, you know, someone you're competing against in their economy. It's just, you have a better eye on the metrics of what's going on in your business. So when changes come, you're more prepared.
What other, so we're talking about sports overall, and I know, I keep going back to the training the kid is like training the customer or the prospect in a sense. But what other lessons can business owners learn from sports and just competitive nature in general?
Well, that it is a competition every day. Every day you get up, you're facing some other business that's putting the work in, maybe more than you, maybe less than you. You don't really know. So it's always a competition. I think paying attention to what your customers do and engage and how they interact with your business is a huge part of keeping up with everything in your business. But also you have to have an eye on what's going on in the competitive landscape. You know, what's happening that may shift things around and my business may be impacted because of competition, you know? And so that's another thing, you know, we're talking about the economy and we're looking at it, but there's nothing wrong with really knowing our business and really well and keeping our eyes on that at the micro level and also paying attention to competition. You know, what are they offering? Are their training courses, packages, whatever they are they significantly different? Is there a new model shifted to now? You know, years ago, we didn't even know what the subscription model was, right? And so many companies now have some kind of subscription that you can join. Coffee, you know, you name it. I mean, there's a subscription out there for just about everything. And it just really didn't exist many years ago. So paying attention to what your competition does, I think, you know, gives you an insight as to where the industry is going.
I want to transition into ask some, not many, but some more selfish questions now that I feel like, I think it'll benefit the audience too, but I wanted to be on topic with those questions, but I think it's my turn. So I got a question for you. It's more nuanced. Actually, one more question that I think will be beneficial for the general audience. What's the most fun, you talk about subscription models, and I know you have a coffee business, you work with Humble Coffee. What would you say the most fun business or the most effective, the business you've helped that has had the most increase or the most results? And what did you do necessarily with that business? Was it the marketing message? Was it something else? Tell me about your work with your clients.
Yeah, so I'll tell you one that's in the same program here with Humble Coffee too. Humble was great, and they've grown tremendously. You know, they've gone from just an online store now to purchasing land at the edge of town and looking to open a retail front. So going literally from clicks only, sort of online, to now more brick and mortar. And so, you know, they've done great sales up. They're now in Kroger. They've grown tremendously. The other one I was going to tell you about, which is part of what I tried to document in the book that I wrote on 5 social media mistakes your business should avoid, is we traced out and studied a company we worked with for several years. And we did the messaging. We worked on messaging first. You know, we talked about Story Brand. We did the messaging with them first, right after Story Brand came out a few years ago in like 2018. And this company sells cameras, and the cameras are put on these traps that landowners purchase, and they're able to see what's in the trap with this phone, with their iPhone. And when whatever's in the trap, they want to catch it, they hit a button and it catches it. So it's really remote catching from the comfort of anywhere you're at. And so as a landowner, they use these traps and camera systems to get rid of these wild hogs that come in and just tear up property. They destroy habitats. They're a nuisance. They're $1 billion plus nuisance in the U.S. every year, mostly in the southeast part of the U.S. So we worked with a company here locally, about 30, 45 minutes from me, and they were selling the cameras. That's what they started doing, but they weren't having a lot of traction. And so we really started to evaluate the messaging. We got it right. We worked on their website. They launched a new website. They did a lead generating PDF. They had an email campaign or series right behind that, so people would get to know them. They talk about the problem they saw for their landowners, how to help landowners avoid mistakes when trapping these wild hogs. You know, they were in that space, totally new to them. They hadn't done any of that. And so now, looking at where they started from years ago, was a small facility outside of town, building the cameras, one or two employees, you know, just trying to build a small business. And you fast forward to 4 or 5 years later, they just purchased a school that's no longer used in our county here after consolidation. That facility alone is 50,000 square feet. Mm. So they have gone from a small facility to a very large facility. The revenues have tracked with that. And so now they're not only building the camera still, but they're building the traps. So they've not only grown in scale and become more efficient at what they're doing, but now scope, they've increased the number of offerings that they have in the market, and now they're bundled. And so their subscription model is, with anybody who buys the system, you get data every month. You have a data subscription and you have access to the camera 24/7. And so they're trying to help landowners really stop all the damage that's being done to their properties by stopping or trapping these feral hogs. So they've had tremendous success. If you look at their social media, there's a simple formula that we use on their content. It is problem, solution, success. And not always us talking about it as a company on their pages, but showing social proof, showing landowners using the tool, the trap, the system, the camera, to effectively trap these nuisance animals. And they have shown that proof over and over again, and it's done well for them. And they moved beyond just Facebook and Instagram now into TikTok, and you know, they're continuing to evolve and their business continues to grow. But you have to rewind and go back and look at what happened in 2018 that changed the course and trajectory of things. And you know, gosh, we put a lot of sales funnel work into what they actually did and started to develop on social so they could grow and continue to grow.
And if you're at liberty to say, I am curious to know what the brand lift or the actual number gain was for them from 2018 to now. But before you actually, if you can, are you at liberty to say that? Because I have a follow-up question that I'm eager to ask as well. But what does that impact look like? They've got new products. They probably have products that have a higher margin with the trap you mentioned, along with the cameras. They have a subscription set up. What did that do to their finances? They're able to buy this 50,000 square foot facility, which is huge.
What I put in the book, some of those impacts, you know, they're up 54% the year after we implemented things. And that trend has continued for a couple of years that we were, you know, working with them and tracking the impacts. And so, yeah, sales were up, no doubt, no question. The number of people they employed shifted to, I think, 42, 44%. I think it's what we reported in the book. You know, and then they expanded into this other product category that they weren't even offering that. And most of their customers kept asking them, hey, why don't you guys offer the trap? And, you know, I mean, you're already selling the camera. That's how I got to you, but I need a trap as well. And they're like, oh, you know, we don't have that today, but we work with all these other traps and we can. And eventually they just said, look, we should build our own. And so now that's what they're doing. So, tremendous impact. And social media, you know, at the time when we were evaluating things, they were going from, I think their Facebook page now is over 300K I have to go back and look. It's been a while, but they didn't have, I think, but maybe 30, 40K when we first started. Mm-hmm. They did put money into ads. We were boosting their brand awareness. We were also boosting the email list. You know, we were really trying to build their email list. And that plays a big part, I think, in any company. Helping it to grow is building your email list. It certainly did for them too.
I'm curious to know do you think I've heard someone say, when we get tired of sharing our message, that's when the customer is first beginning to hear it or read it. So once we get the basis down for it, here's the problem, here's the solution, and the framework that you're mentioning in the book and in your courses, do you think there is a way that should we communicate it ad nauseum, or is there a certain time or frequency that we should be communicating this message? If that makes sense.
Yeah, I think you're always on brand 24/7. You know, your messaging has to be, you know, resonate with people and your customers. And you have to be consistent with it, because that's how we build up memory. We have to be consistent saying that what we do, how we help customers, all these things have to be present everywhere you go. You know, we talk about, you know, putting a one-liner together, you know, that's at the bottom of your email. That tells your ideal customer, hey, here's the problem I solve. Here's the solution I offer that's going to give you a better life and solve that problem. And here's how you can get started today, right? You know, something very simple like that. You use it everywhere you go. If you go to dinner and you meet someone new, and they say, hey, tell me about your business. You know, hey, well, you know what? And you start with the problem. And then you pivot to your solution, what you sell, and then you offer them an opportunity later to engage with you somehow. So I think you're always doing that. And it's not just that you're trying to create an easy way for people to remember what you do and the problem you solve, but this at the end of the day is really the foundation of an agreement that you're making with followers and would-be customers. And that agreement is, here's what I'm going to do to help you have a better life. This is going to be my brand reputation. I'm going to build my business on the reputation that I'm going to help you solve this problem. I'm going to help you do it in such a way you're going to really have a better life. And here's the solution to get you there. And then you invite them into that transformation step, whatever it may be. And I think you're just building your reputation on that. Every time you're using your messaging, every time you're interacting with your followers, you just stay consistent. As we know, that's the most difficult thing to do in anything day in and day out, is being consistent. And so I think it's tremendously powerful if we can just stay consistent with something. People will get to know us a lot better.
And I appreciate that clarification there too. So next to last question for you. How are we doing on time? So we got 7 minutes left.
I'm good. Yeah, I'm good.
Whatever you need. Okay. Okay, thank you. So particular specific question for one, I think that will resonate with a lot of basketball trainers as well, especially if they are running advertising. So one of the metrics, and we talked about metrics early in the interview, what I've gone back and forth with, and I know you have Bricks to Clicks, and you've trademarked that, I believe, correct? Like, that's I love the name. It makes me think about basketball too. Like, hey, you're bricking on this potential visitor here. Now you got them clicking. I don't know if you wanted that double entendre with it or not, but it could be bricks and brick and mortar to clicks. It could be a lot of different things. So that's why I like it so much.
Yeah, it was, it came about because when we first started the program, about 10 years ago here at Mississippi State, I was working with a lot of brick and mortar companies trying to go online. You know, which way do I go? Do I just use Facebook? Do I use, you know, and some of the social platforms didn't exist, right? So there are a whole bunch of new ones have come out, TikTok being the most recent, you know, that's gotten a lot of attention. And so it was like always helping brick and mortar companies go online. So I was like, this is like helping everyone go from bricks to clicks. And then, you know, like I said, for Humble Coffee, they've gone the other way. They went from clicks only to now bricks. So it's all over the map. But yeah, that's how it came about. And so I was like, okay, this is what we've been doing. So that's what we're going to call it.
I like it. So when it comes to trying to calculate a cost to acquire a customer, so to speak, if this is an online and a brick and mortar business, would you, and let's just say the formula is how much it costs for somebody to enter our door. Now, the door may be like for Humble Coffee. They got an online portion and they have an in-person portion. And let's say, would you calculate that cost to acquire a customer based on how much it costs to get a click to their website? Or would you calculate it on how much it costs to get that person to actually walk into the door? And I mentioned Humble Coffee, but I'm really asking about basketball trainers, so to speak, because just based off of those two different metrics right there, you change the cost to acquire that customer drastically. Even if the conversion rate were the same, does that make sense? Which one would you suggest that owners, business owners look at if they are spending money on advertising or not?
I think at the end of the day, you have to set a goal for your advertising. Not all of your advertising is going to translate into immediate conversions. So some goals may just be getting more downloads to my lead generating PDF video course or whatever. Like, what you have to clarify the goal. So if the goal is getting more emails, that's what you're looking at as the conversion metric. So you're looking at dollars spent on an ad to see how many exact, you know, those are conversions, right? But The ultimate conversion is long haul. You're looking at sales too, but that campaign itself, you have to really look at what is sort of the marginal cost of getting someone to actually download the PDF as opposed to the marginal cost of them to being converting as a sales, of buying a course or a training product, right? So Be clear about the goal. That's the first thing. You know, if you're clear about that, then you can measure the conversion. You can go, okay, so when we run this kind of a video in our awareness campaign, or let's say it's a Facebook campaign, we can then track that we're getting more emails and this is why. And you want to experiment with this. One of the things that I think you have to do is you have to run multiple kinds of ads to experiment. That's one of the things that we help companies do. We've helped Hawkeye do it to great length, is experimenting with what works best as a source of video or images, either one, and running those tests and being experimental and having a small budget to figure that out. That's what we call pre-testing when we run ads or help companies, figure that out. You want to run what I call a horse race. It's really what it is. You're putting out maybe four videos or three or two, and you're comparing how many conversions are we getting for that. And the conversion in this case could be download, get email addresses, which one seems to be performing better in our first 7 days of the test, or 2 weeks, 10 days. Okay, so the one that's outperforming the other one, Facebook starts to figure out where to put that ad in front of more people like the ones who are responding, right? And so it may be at some point you divert money from one ad into the other one and you just push it out even more. So I think there's a lot of this pre-stuff, testing it, we have to do. It's trial and error. You're trying to figure out what's going to move the needle a little bit. So being really stringent up front with a brand new campaign that you've never run before and saying this one's got to be at a certain cost or, it's not working, it can be a little tricky to say that. You may be setting a standard that nobody's doing on Facebook. You may have a cost per lead that the average cost on Facebook is, much higher or much lower. It could vary a lot. But figuring out the goal is like the big thing. Like, which one are you after? Connected to that, I think there's one mistake that we can all make when we start looking at these individual marketing campaigns. You may have spent some money, let's say, to build a landing page for a new training program. Let's just say that. And you put money into the landing page. You had a copywriter work on it, whatever. And you have a PDF that's popping up. You put money into that. So you get all that you put together. And then you're going to run a campaign on Facebook to run, drive people over to that landing page. One of the mistakes you can make is counting the entire cost of building the landing page as a part of this campaign. It's not. That is sunk cost. Whether you run the campaign on Facebook or whatever social platform you want, this cost that you've already sunk it, like it's gone. Like, you put it into building the landing page. Now what we're looking at is just the conversions based on a clear goal of whatever the advertisement goal is, more emails, whatever. So we just don't want to say, oh, this is the cost of the campaign includes this other cost. It doesn't. It's separate. You need to look at the marginal cost of the campaign, not this sort of sunk cost. And it's easy to do. I mean, I've been in that situation too for different things and gone, man, we spent so much money to build this thing, you know. But that's gone. You got to get focused now on the campaign.
Don't mess up the campaign metrics by including things that are already sunk in there. You do. I can see how you can pervert those numbers and those results and that data and really the actions afterwards by including that data. So last question for you. Why is, whether it's the course, the book, it's the extension program, why is a marketing course worth purchasing?
Well, at the end of the day, you have to set aside time to invest in yourself. If you're the business owner and you're the one making those executive decisions on marketing and growing your business, you got to set aside the time and invest in yourself. You can get really wrapped up in the day-to-day, juggling the day-to-day, that you forget the best investment you can make is in yourself. And increasing your education in a space, could be marketing or anything else, is going to pay you dividends. It's going to increase the value of your business overall. So taking the time to put that into a marketing course that's going to get you the things you need. You know, you really need about four things to really grow your business with a marketing course. A, you want to get the messaging right. Second, you want to get the strategy right. Then you want to have a website that's a great website that converts website visitors into either paying customers or a lot of email downloads, right? You want that. And then overall, you need a full sales funnel, you know, from A to Z. What does that look like? You know, what we learned during COVID and post-COVID is that companies that had a complete sales funnel going into COVID were much more likely to pivot and make changes and survive, you know, a lot better than ones that didn't have a full sales funnel. And that includes a lot of things we've talked about here today, these things. So have a sales funnel, get ready for it, because it's middle of the year, 2023. If you're a retail business coming up, we know that the big push is coming up in, you know, the fall. Don't wait until the fall to start doing and getting ready for that. Start now. Invest in yourself. Take a marketing course. The one that we're offering is Master Your Marketing. It's a four-week course. 2 hours a week is all we're going to require. You can do it in the morning. You can do it in the evening. A lot of business owners are going to choose evening because 6 to 8 p.m. is a lot easier to work into a schedule when you're running your business compared to 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. So take the course. Get a plan. Don't wait to invest in yourself to do a better job of growing your business with marketing.
Dr. James Barnes, I appreciate the time in our conversation. It was nice to e-meet you. Where can we learn more about you, what you do, and what you're offering?
Yeah, go to masteryourmarketingcourse.com and check out the course. The free video course that we have there as well is called Website Mini Masterclass. So either one, take the course or get the other one that you had mentioned that you had already downloaded and looked at. Get that one too. Get to know kind of what we're going to do in the class a little bit. That'll give you an experience of it before you make the decision to join the class.
Dr. James, I appreciate your time and I hope you have a great rest of your day.
You too, Myson. Thanks again.
Yo, hope that podcast gave you some value. If it did, please rate, review, and subscribe to this. It only makes the podcast better. I read every single one. And at the very least, go join our group. You'll see the link in the description of this episode, and I will catch you on the next one.